today on the Pure Sweat Basketball Show.
And so I tell young coaches, be an ambassador for your school.
Maybe I led you to believe it was easy when it wasn't. Maybe I made you think my highlights started at the free throw line and not in the gym.
Turn my headphones up!
Let's eliminate the will to win and think about the will to prepare to win.
That's how winning is done.
It's about being a great teammate. It's about being accountable to one another. It's about being tough. It's about doing the right things for each other, but it's about doing it every day.
This is Fran Frischeller from ESPN, and you are listening to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show.
Hey, 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 welcome back or welcome to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show, where every episode is a micro clinic designed to serve players, coaches, and parents at every level. I'm your host, Alan Stein. Today's show is brought to you by Dr. Dish, the best machine on the market dedicated to building complete basketball players. Check out their new revolutionary skill builder program at drdishbasketball.com. And if you mention this show, you'll receive an exclusive discount on your next purchase. We also want to show our sincere appreciation for the folks at Crossover, the top video breakdown service in the game. Visit crossoverwithak.com to see how they can help you win more games next season. In today's episode, I continue my chat with Super Coach Michael Burt, the former championship basketball coach and current speaker, author, and business coach and consultant. If you haven't listened to part one of our interview, I highly recommend you go check it out and then stay tuned for part three. All right, let's jump back in with Super Coach Michael Burt. You're one of the most motivational and inspiring people I know. Talk to me about what was your philosophy during pregame, halftime, and postgame talks? How did you approach those?
Well, pregame is very, very critical. I spent an enormous amount of time thinking and meditating on what I specifically wanted to say to the players. But when you are teaching your players things like I was teaching them in a year on a year-round basis, all of your content is there. When you're teaching players the 7 habits of highly effective people, and I got that from Don Meyer, by the way. The great Don Meyer was a huge influence on me when I was 18 years old. And so everybody had their notebooks. My players had to sit in the front one-third of their seat. They had to make eye contact with every person that walked in to speak. I mean, they were like little trained machines. And they showed up 15 minutes early to everything. You know, and what we basically did, when I had all of this content, from whether it be the 7 habits or good to great or the 5 dysfunctions or the power of intention, what I would do is if I'm teaching that lesson throughout the courses of those weeks or on Unity, you know, I would pull out one of those lessons and tell stories, because when you study the brain, there's different parts of the brain. There's the front part of the brain, which is scared of everything, called the croc brain, and it operates out of fear. And you don't want, it's a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing because it keeps you out of trouble. It's a bad thing because when you're operating in fear, you're always fleeing or fighting, and you're real emotional, and it's not where the decisions are being made. So the way you touch the neocortex, which is the top part of the brain, is you tell stories. So I would always carefully plan my pregame talks, and I would meet with my players in the afternoon of a game, and I would talk sometimes typically a tactical, you know, at that point. Here's the things we're going to do. Here's how we're going to do it. But always half of that meeting was on stories. The pregame meeting was more about motivation. We knew what to do. We had been trained. Muscle memory is going to kick in. What I try to do is touch the deepest part of their human nature, which is their heart and their spirit. So when we were winning that first championship, we had to win 10 games in a row. So we had a huge visual drawn up on the board. Every step went up. Each step meant something different, and every step had a lesson attached to it. So I spent a lot of time thinking, what specifically am I going to say? How am I going to touch the deepest part of their nature? Halftime was more about recalibration. We chart every play. We look at the probability of what worked and what didn't work. We come back in the second half, and we only went to the things that worked. We threw out things that didn't work. Post-game, you know, there's a lot of coaches have different philosophies. Phil Jackson was a guy that would say, you're professionals. You know, we played poorly. You know, when you take a shower, flush it down the drain, and let's move on to the next one. But what I found is this. Losing was a big deal with me. And because of my competitive nature, I wanted people to really, really hate losing. And so when we did lose, we did a deep evaluation, and we went through what I call the 5 rules of a crisis. Number one, what did we do to contribute to this adversity? Number two, not why me. No, so there was no why, no complaining. But what is this trying to teach me? Number three, let's not get emotional. Let's be stable, because you can't make great decisions when you're emotional. Number four, let's figure out the help that we need and go to work on that one key area. And number five, let's get busy. So when we lost, I went through those five rules of a crisis every time. Whether it's a crisis or not, it's just five rules of adversity, really.
Well, I tell you what, man, it certainly sounds like even though you took over that program at the ripe age of 22, you really had your act together and knew what you were doing and were years ahead of the coaching world in so many different ways. So this might be a moot point, but if you could go back and do anything different as a basketball coach before we transition into your business coaching, is there anything that you would do different?
Absolutely.
Oh, really?
I hear people say this all the time. No, I would never do anything different. You know, exactly the way it worked out. When you take over a program like mine at 22, you're hell bent on proving to the world how good you are. You got a huge chip on your shoulder. And that's for one thing. It's from insecurity.
Yeah.
You know, so we overcompensate for our insecurity by puffing up and by trying to be big. The biggest mistake I made is I was in a very influential position. A lot of coaches do this. So I really encourage young coaches, don't do this. Instead of being ambassadors for the entire university, the entire school, what they do is become islands unto themselves. They become very selfish. They're only concerned with their program. They could care less about what the football program does or the tennis program or the soccer program. And what happens is that really polarizes people. And that's a huge mistake I made, is I said, I'm going to focus on my basketball program and make it the best it can be. And, you know, maybe I'll show up and support another team. Maybe I won't. Maybe I care. Maybe I don't. And what I really did was polarize people toward me. Mm. And then I became the athletic director my last 2 years. And I saw more infighting and silliness and majoring in the minors from the coaches than I did the players. Football coach wouldn't let the soccer coach practice on the football field. That this coach wouldn't do this. And it was, I'm like, this gives me a whole new perspective on this. We all got the same jersey on. We all are at the same university. We're all at the same school. And look at the pettiness of what we spend time fighting on. And again, it stems from two things, an arrogance and a selfishness. And so I tell young coaches, be an ambassador for your school. Be out front. Help support everybody. Don't get caught up in being in silo or island unto yourself. That was one thing I would do different. And the other thing is, in the beginning, Alan, I scared everybody to death. I mean, I did have myself together, but I walked in on the very first meeting, the day they introduced me as the head coach, and the first things out of my mouth was, some of you probably won't be here by the end of this week. And so I put people in a state of fear, and what I really wanted them to do is up their ante, but it was actually the reverse effect. I should have walked in and said, man, I am so honored to be the coach here. I should have went for buy-in first to me. So my first season, we were 13-16, had four ACL tears with four of my best players. And guess who caused that? I did. So I go to my team doctor and I'm like, man, what is the problem here? And he said, let me tell you the problem. It's you. He said, you have increased the intensity so much with these players from the previous coach that their bodies physically cannot handle what you're putting them through. And so as a result of that, I brought in one of the best strength coaches in the country. This was 1999, so it was almost unheard of to have a strength coach for high school girls basketball. So I brought in a strength coach, and we went toward injury prevention, very deep injury prevention, plus stronger. And that was really one of the best things. But I had to learn the hard lesson. Everything's not a hammer. Everything's not a nail, and you're not a hammer. There's other ways to get things done. But I constantly just try to force it down people's throat.
So powerful. I love that you were so innovative and ahead of your time. And you are correct. In the late 90s, nobody was doing that. So that's really cool. And one thing I want to say that is the ultimate compliment and a real testament to what you built is that program went on to have success and continues to have success based on the culture that you help implement, even though that you're not the coach anymore. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, and I'm probably more proud of that than just winning the first championship. The program now has won six of the last eight state championships in Tennessee. It has been the USA Today number one team in the country two times of those 6 years. And, man, I'm just so proud of the legacy that we've built and something that's continued to go on even after I've gone. So that we did set expectation. We did build culture. And now it's a little greatness factory.
Love it. Now we're going to transition a little bit, but what I think is really important for coaches listening to know that the stuff we're going to talk about now, even though it may skew a little bit more on the business side, that this stuff is still so transferable and applicable to the coaching side. And as you said in the beginning, when you took over that program, you were applying business principles to basketball, and then you had an amazing career as a basketball coach, and now you're taking basketball principles and applying them to the business world. So I love the fact that there's an inverse relationship. So regardless of who's listening, you're going to get major benefit from this. And I will say that I've read all of Coach Burt's books. They are phenomenal. They've had a huge impact on me, both personally and professionally. So I recommend you guys check those out and follow him on all the major social platforms. And you can find all of that on his site at coachburt.com. One of the things that you've talked about that had a profound impact on me from a business standpoint and a personal standpoint, now that I'm divorced and dating again, was the difference between chasing and attracting. Talk a little bit about that and why that's so important.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I wrote a book called Person of Interest, and you are 100% correct. We live in a sports society in the United States, and really all over the country, all over the world, and people are intensely curious about both sides. And I say coaches need to learn more about business, and business people need to learn more about sports, because there's so many transferables. And if you read my books, you're going to get both of those. I've written coaching books, and I've written business books, but they all have coaching acumen in there. And when I wrote Person of Interest, here's what I said: chasing anything sucks. Okay. The way to really move forward in the world is to become so valuable and have such an interesting and valuable skill set that you are attracting people and opportunity to you. And what I said is there are ingredients of people of interest. So think of a person of influence that other people want a piece of, that are interested in because of the unique skill set that they've cultivated. See, in our society, we've been taught to chase.
Yeah.
Chase success, chase leads, chase manipulate, sell. What if you become the buyer versus the seller? And you can become the buyer versus the seller by having something that's really, really good. So in that book, I talk about ingredients. You know, a person of interest has specific knowledge. They have very unique skills. They have high levels of desire. They've got impeccable confidence or contagious confidence. They've got high levels of likability. They've got great connectivity. They've got deep networks. And then there's something about that person that I just can't get anywhere else. You know, it's like a free prize. It's an intangible something. I'm like, man, this guy is good. And for all the coaches that are out there, if you really want to drive up your stock, you create something that other people want so badly that they would almost pay any price for it. And this is happening in the college game, Alan.
Oh, yeah.
If you look at the rising, salaries of the Division I head coaches in the country, there's many articles about this. When the athletic director or president of a university wants to win, they walk down to the athletic director's office and they say this: who is the best coach in the country? And what is it going to cost us to have them? And that athletic director goes and looks, and they start looking at who's the hottest, who's the best, who's the up and coming. And really, those coaches, it's not the university that's the buyer. It's those coaches, because once they come to that coach and say, I want you to come to my university because of your unique skill set, that coach can say yes or no. I will take it or leave it. Here's how much it'll cost for me to come and do this. And so what they're really becoming are people of interest. We see this with the Calipari's of the world that are making $8 to $10 million. We see that because look at their skill set. I mean, they are developing incredible skill sets. And a lot of these guys are using business concepts, by the way, right?
Oh, for sure.
They've got huge followings. They're writing books. They have their own podcasts, TV shows. Those are all person of interest things. So how does a high school coach do that? Well, I did all of those things as a high school coach. You know, we had our own shows. We did our own events. We tried to do all of these things. I could not recruit because I was at a public school. But nobody said I couldn't make my program attractive.
Right.
So we had the nicest locker rooms, the nicest uniforms. We went to the greatest places to play. And what happened is parents began to see, man, this guy is so head and shoulders above the other programs. His program is so much more attractive. So people of interest build organizations of interest. Now they're not chasing, they're attracting.
And for the programs that can recruit, I think that's also very valid, that instead of trying to chase down recruits, make a program and a culture and a chemistry that's so attractive that players want to come play for you and want to come play with the players in your program, as opposed to trying to chase them down. That's it. Another episode in the bank. Thank you so much for investing your time with us. I hope Coach Burt and I helped you raise your game. Check out CoachBurt.com and follow him on all social platforms. And don't forget to go back and listen to part one of this conversation and stay tuned for part three. As always, I want to give another sincere thank you to Dr. Dish for revolutionizing basketball training with their innovative shooting machines. Learn more at DrDishBasketball.com. And remember, if you mention this show, Dr. Dish will extend an exclusive discount on your next purchase. All right, it's time to get back in the gym.